Do you have a dog that pulls you the second you step out the front door? Today's podcast is going to help you solve that problem. I'm Instructor Shannon. Welcome back to the McCann Dogs Podcast.
A little puppy hasn't been trained to walk properly yet. So if I take my little puppy out and they start dragging me, you know, up the neighbor's driveway or across the front lawn, I'm really setting a bad precedent.
Yeah.
My puppy says I'm in charge of walks. So walks with a puppy aren't really existing when they're young. You know, if I do take them out, I'm going to be using food to lure them along. I'm just going to be, you know, using my fun voice. I want the puppy to learn that following me is what we want to do on walks.
I love that. Yeah.
Not me following the puppy. The other day I was watching TV and something caught my eye on my front lawn. And I thought, there's a man on my front lawn. And I stood up to go and see what was happening. And it was actually a man with a great big mastiff mix.
Okay.
And his dog was pulling him across my lawn to my neighbor's lawn to take a big dump.
Oh.
And so I watched out the window and I thought, I would never let my dog drag me to take a dump on someone's lawn, like right up by their window. But then I looked and I thought, I don't think that man can control that dog.
Gotcha.
That is a huge dog.
Yeah.
And if that dog wants to pull him, off they go.
Yikes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that can be a very dangerous situation.
Yes.
So I think a lot of the times people end up creating their own frustrations and
yes.
their own issues, especially when it comes to pulling, by sort of putting the cart before the horse, if you will.
Right.
So a lot of people think, you know, and understandably, like this is sort of the message we get in our society. You get a dog, you go for walks with mm-hmm. them, right? So of course you bring home a puppy, you should go for walks with them, right? But thinking about what that actually does, right?
Yes.
And what we know, of course, about dogs is that what they rehearse is what becomes habit. Mm-hmm. And generally, that rehearsal needs to include something that is rewarding for the dog, for them to want to repeat that behavior, which, of course, getting to a new area to investigate, dogs being scavengers, mm-hmm. them being, you know, creatures that love to investigate
yes.
and, you know, navigate the world mm-hmm. and stick their nose into this, that, and the other. Getting to get places is rewarding for the dog.
Right. And in fact, if they find something to eat or something like that, they're pulling you down the street and they find, a potato chip that's fallen out of a bag.
That happens
wow.
with me too. You know, I leave my friends in the dust when I see potato chips
on the ground. Yes. Yeah. Well, they're free too. Free food.
Actually, I'm not a potato chip person. I'm a sweet
tooth. No, I'm not really potato chips, but dogs love potato
dogs
chips.
Dogs are not very discerning.
Nope,
they
nope.
would not say, do I want the ice cream or do I want the chips? They would just eat both.
Eat both, yes. So if they find a chip on the floor.
I probably would too, truly. But yes, carry
on.
Oh,
I just thought of something.
Oh.
Potato chip flavored ice cream. I've never seen that.
Oh, well, they have pretzel flavored ice cream.
Are you listening out there, Chapman's?
Yeah, come on, Chapman's.
Yeah. Do they pretzel? I can see pretzel.
They do have pretzel ice creams, right?
But what about potato chip ice cream?
Yeah.
How about ice cream that is inside a potato chip?
Whoa.
And you bite it and there's ice cream. Like the chip-covered peanuts that you can get at Picard's Peanuts.
Interesting.
Right.
I think you should market that.
I'm going to.
It might taste
yes.
gross, but I bet it would sell really well. I don't know. You know, debate's out. Would that be good or would it not be good?
I don't know.
Anyway, so the dog would eat both.
Right.
That's the point.
Right. Yes.
The
yes.
dog's not discerning. And I mean, really, that's part of what they're out there doing is mm-hmm. looking for interesting things to find, looking for social opportunities and engagement and all of these things, mm-hmm. right? Checking out the big wide world and checking out what we have to offer them. And of course, if we're just trailing behind with the leash, the dog is getting rewarded for the wrong behaviors, which is going to promote them rehearsing the wrong behaviors, mm-hmm. which of course makes our life so much more difficult. So
and what they learn earliest, they learn best.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And explain that.
So when a puppy is small, they are little absorbent sponges. And
yes,
they,
that's a good way to put it.
Yes,
I love that. Sponges.
They are always learning. So if we're allowing them to do things as a puppy, then they feel it's right. And that's what they continue to do. And then as they get older and we say, hold on a second, I can't have you dragging me across the street to check out that. The puppy says, but you always have.
Yeah.
Why have what's changed now? And now you and the puppy are working against each other rather than working with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's frustrating for you
mm-hmm.
both, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dog doesn't like being held back physically and trying to get to the place that they need to go. But actually, I always used to laugh. My mother was terrible, terrible for allowing her dogs to pull. But luckily, mm-hmm. she lived with a CKC Spaniel and really, he was pretty harmless mm-hmm. in terms of pulling. She only weighed 100 pounds. And I often tried to impress upon her the simple exercises that she could do to help William not pull much.
Yep.
But it wasn't really that important to her. And luckily she could get away with it because mm-hmm. he wasn't that heavy of a dog.
Right.
But I always used to laugh when I'd watch them because I'd think, that poor dog, he must be thinking, geez, my life would be a lot easier if I didn't have to pull this 100-pound woman around all the time. This is the chore that I'm tasked with, right? Really. I wish they had given me a Rottweiler's body to do it. I would have been much better equipped. But at any rate, they had a wonderful life together mm-hmm. and she yes. didn't mind and it worked out okay. So right. by all means, uh-huh. whatever works for you. But if you have a dog that you are worried is going to pull you over, if you have a dog that you're worried about the damage to their neck, if they're pulling into a collar, mm-hmm. Et cetera, it's always a good idea to teach some loose lead walking skills.
Right. So, yes. Yeah. I always remember seeing an older woman. She was probably in her 70s and she was hanging on to the leash of a Scottish deerhound. And the Scottish deerhound was chasing something and she was on her stomach and she looked like a toboggan. Goodness. She was tobogganing behind the dog. Oh. And, you know, people all ran to her to help her. It was at a dog show. And, the power of that dog to pull down that lady and then to drag her. And I think she had her hand wrapped in the leash as well. Dear. So she couldn't let go. She was unable to let go.
Oh, that's a good point. Let's mm-hmm. talk about how to properly and safely hold onto a leash. Because in that scenario, like that is, I mean, it's one thing to be uncomfortable with your dog pulling you down the street. It's entirely another to be dragged physically mm-hmm. and not be able to get out of that situation.
Right.
So let's talk about how to properly hold the leash. So she had it wrapped around her wrist
and
her hand.
You see many people out on the street and they've wrapped the dog's leash around their hand. Yeah. And we don't want to do that because just in case something happens and your leash is wrapped, now your arm is trapped.
Yeah.
And if that dog suddenly pulls you out into traffic or runs down a hill or like that lady, you know, brings her right down, you can't free your arm and it could right. cause some damage to your arm or your wrist.
Yeah. There are a couple of really good ways to lock your leash in your hand and have a really good grip, but also one that you can control. Mm-hmm. And the one that we use and the one that we recommend is sliding your thumb through the loop of the leash and then gathering up a little bit of the excess from that leash and then closing your fist over the leash. So basically the leash in my hand, all of the impact is going through my hand, but I have that solid grip on my thumb mm-hmm. just in case there's a little bit more pressure there. And it's a much nicer way to hold the leash. And it's a much more, I just have to adjust my headphones here because they're sliding off my head. It's a much nicer
sleek hair of yours, Shannon.
Sleek hair.
Sleek.
It's a much nicer way of actually being able to use and manipulate the leash mm-hmm. so that now you do have some. You can go to technique mm-hmm. to stop the pulling, and you can go to things like the sit placement are possible. When you have good control of the leash with your right hand, you can then manipulate and touch and use the leash and be able to ask for other things from your dog in those moments.
And so, if you did have to let go in an emergency, you can let go.
Yeah,
absolutely. I once saw a woman pushing a baby stroller with a large dog, and she had the leash tied to the baby stroller with a baby in it.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she wasn't even touching the dog's leash.
Oh.
And the dog was plodding along, but I thought, oh, wow, like that's an animal. And if suddenly, you know, he pulls into his genetics and says, I'm taking off after that squirrel, that's your baby in that stroller.
Oh, my goodness,
So I was, I didn't know. Should I say something? I didn't. And looking back, I was younger, but I think now I would. I think now I would for the safety of that child.
Yeah.
But so my goodness. Do not tie your leash to your baby stroller.
Yikes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just never know. Right. I mean, even our extremely well-trained dogs, they have moments of excitement, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could take that moment to go and pick up a piece of poo and expect that your dog is going to make a good choice, but it's entirely possible that they make a mistake. And
people aren't perfect and neither are dogs.
You got it.
Yes. I always shudder when I see people walking down busy streets with off-leash dogs.
Swanee, you're a people, and I think you're perfect.
Thank you, Shannon. I think you're a perfect people, too.
A perfect people.
Perfect people.
That just reminded me of the purple people
eater. The purple people eater, yes.
He had one long horn and one big eye. Anyways.
One-eyed, one horn, flying purple people eater.
One-eyed, one horn, flying purple
people eater.
We wear short shorts. That just took me right back to sitting in my room and listening to.
Oh, she wore an itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini.
Did you have the same album?
That we must have.
Goofy Grace?
We must have. Maybe.
I had this double album, mm-hmm. and I remember being such a small child uh-huh. and like just bopping around my room listening to this album and singing all these great songs.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. You just took me right back to my youth. Anyways, okay. Back to dogs. We digress so easily.
But yes.
It's fun.
It's easy to distract us.
Alrighty. So the walk itself, it's going to take on the tone of how it starts.
Yes,
right?
Definitely.
So you hear a lot about not just starting the walk by opening the door and letting your dog drag you out of it. And there's some people out there that are doing, you know, really rough things. When the dog runs out the front door, there's these giant pops to right. stop
yes.
them.
And now with
corrections.
With door ring bells, door ring doorbells.
Okay.
And, they have the camera on them. I've been watching, I love America's Funniest Home Videos. And I've seen quite a few where people, the ring doorbell catches, they walk outside, they turn to lock their door and their dog's already going. And you see the person fly off the porch with their dog.
Yikes.
Yes. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah. Not a good thing.
No.
Right? Not a good thing. In a perfect world, we can have a nice, enjoyable walk with our dog. And of mm-hmm. course, in that perfect world, we need to start the walk being a nice, enjoyable thing as well. And that means we spend a lot of time at the front door when we have young puppies in training. So you said, you know, your intention when you bring home a puppy is not to take them for big, long walks
right.
because that allows them to rehearse the wrong things. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So what does, when a puppy comes into your home, what does the process look like for you to do the work and teach them how to walk nicely?
Well, one of the first things I'm going to teach my dog is to accept having the leash clipped on them in a calm fashion.
Love that.
There is nothing worse than trying to wrestle a puppy or a dog that does not true. Want to have the leash clipped on them, or they think it's hilarious fun to have the leash clipped on
it's
them.
That's true.
So that's something to practice with a baby puppy.
Yeah.
Clipping the leash on, unclipping the leash, you know, fiddling with their collar. I don't know how many times here in class dogs come in and they need a new collar. And we have a store here that sells collars that we buckle collars that are adjustable that we highly recommend. And I don't know how many times I've been accosted and dove over and because the dog cannot sit still to have me adjust the collar.
Yeah.
And then I'll say, okay, I'll have the owner do it. And then it's 10 times as bad. And,
oh,
you know,
my
it's.
Goodness.
So yeah, teaching the puppy to have their equipment put on them
yes.
is a great starting point because
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
How every walk starts with us clipping on a leash.
Yeah.
So there's our first point.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes it's just a matter of skill.
Right.
Right. Sometimes it's not that the dog's being wild and crazy on purpose. It's just that they're so excited
yes.
and we've not taught them how to control their emotions mm-hmm. in that situation. They're thinking, I'm going for a walk, I'm going for a walk, I'm going out, I'm mm-hmm. going out. They're
right.
so excited to get
yep.
there and they don't have any other thought process besides that, because a lot of the times as people, when we don't know what to do mm-hmm. and sometimes, you know, we're working with our dogs or our listeners are working with their dogs and they're not necessarily well-versed in methods mm-hmm. just yet. And they're not sure what to do. So they kind of get by.
Right.
Right. And there's all sorts of situations where, you know, outside of dogs where mm-hmm. I'm like, ooh, not sure what to do here. So I'm just going to minimize the damage and get by.
Right.
And sometimes that's shooting myself in the foot, and definitely with dogs and dog training,
mm-hmm.
that is going to be one of those shooting myself in the foot moments.
Right.
So we want to teach them those skills. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time with games like taking hold of the collar, making sure that we can tell our dog settle, mm-hmm. take the collar and have them just sort of relax. And these are all skills that we teach in our programs. Our Puppy Essentials program mm-hmm. teaches our puppies how to go from wild and crazy party, like we call playtime, and mm-hmm. we have some fun and we wrestle with them and, you know, we enjoy our puppies,
right?
Mm-hmm. right? We teach them the appropriate rules mm-hmm. of play. And then we teach them how to turn that off as well. By the end of the Puppy Essentials program, we're able to reach in, take their collar, tell them settle, and they just go, ah, and the energy drains out of them,
right.
and we can reward that, right?
Definitely, yes.
So now we have an alternate behavior to mm-hmm. you touch me and I go wild and crazy. We have you touch me and I've learned how to settle.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use that.
Right.
And that is such, honestly, it seems like a simple thing,
mm-hmm.
but it is such a good skill to have for life for those moments,
right?
Right?
Yep,
so you can take the collar, have the dog calm, reach in, clip on the leash, and then, okay, now we're going for a walk.
Right, yes. And that's, in the future, you may have to have a dog walker come in or a family member come in to walk the dog.
Yeah, good point.
Or at the vet clinic or at the boarding kennel, somebody's going to have to clip and unclip a leash off your dog and possibly take the collar off and on. You want it to be a pleasant experience yeah. for the dog and the person.
Yeah, so, most definitely.
So something very basic to work on with a young dog or a brand new dog that you've got is just being calm. Yeah. With that collar and leash.
Absolutely. And dog training doesn't need to be that complicated. It really doesn't. If you can think about the problem you're trying to solve and what you would like it to look like, it's usually something that you can teach with your dogs. So that's a great place to start. I absolutely love that as a means of breaking things down. And a lot of the times with dogs, I always say, you know, the big picture, right? Compare that to calculus. So the big picture is a beautiful walking dog on a loose lead, right out the front door, all the way through the walk and all the way back home again, right? That's like the completed learning of calculus for us as humans. But we don't go into school and start with calculus.
No.
We go into school and we break down things in math so that we can eventually get to the goal of calculus, right? Or and I only like, say calculus because it sounds like the most complex. Yeah. I really have very limited math skills.
Another one we could use too is you've been looking at some art.
Uh-huh.
And you're learning to draw.
Yeah.
So you just don't start painting, you're learning very slowly how to do the figures and
what
the media to use.
Exactly.
And
you know what? I love that analogy because it speaks so well to me right now because I'm like, I'm going through stuff that I did in high school that I have not even thought about since high school and like learning that everything breaks down into shapes and learning how that applies to art. So that's a brilliant thing. So like the human face, for example.
I just didn't want to think about math.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Shannon, no
I
math.
I get you. Well, and somebody who, who's out there and knows calculus, I should actually ask my my sister's partner is a math professor at Waterloo and I'm sure that he
we need to have him as a guest.
My niece is quite the mathematician now well. Like she's definitely surpassed me when she was like eight in terms of her math skills. So amazing. But yeah, what we want for our dogs is for them to be able to grasp simple concepts. So like thinking about that art thing, right? Thinking about how to draw a human face. It's not draw the face. It's okay, draw a circle to form this part of the face. Draw a cylinder to form this sort of side of the face. Draw a circle for the ears. And then you refine those pieces, right? You don't just start by trying to draw the whole head. You draw these shapes and then you start adding detail. So it's very, you're so brilliant.
I'm just having,
down to talk about this
what
today,
is even a blind
analogy.
Squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
That's Marty McCann-ism. Yeah.
Or the, blind squirrel. A broken clock is right twice a day. I said it wrong once to my partner. I said it to him. I said, even a broken clock is, what would be the opposite? Even a broken clock is wrong twice a day or something like that. So it's a joke now. Yes.
And he looked at you like you were
yeah.
a little odd.
Yeah. I was trying to say yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's perfect. So yeah, we break things down. We give them the bits and pieces and chunks and then we put it all together to make the full drawing.
Yes.
Right. So that means teaching some walking skills in the house. Mm-hmm. Right. So teaching my puppy what it's like to heel with me in the house, what it's like to be in control position, that it's valuable to be in control position.
Yes.
And I wanted to
And
do
why
that.
Are you starting in the house?
I'm starting in the house because I don't want to have to compete for his attention. We talk about competing motivators and out there in the real world, there's going to be one around every corner.
Yes.
And the young puppies, they can't handle the competing motivators just yet. You know, as our dogs get older and as they get more training, they're able to handle the competing motivators. But as puppies, it just creates conflict for learning and it just makes things a little bit harder than us. Now, I don't want to stagnate in the house forever. I don't want to only do my training in the house because then I get to the point where I can't go outside because there's just too much drastic difference between the distractions in the house and the or the lack of distractions in the house and the huge distractions outside. So once I've got a basic understanding of the concept, I'm going to start adding distractions. I'm going to start going out on my front porch. I'm going to start utilizing my driveway, utilizing the sidewalk in front of my house, you know, still thinking about having the concepts broken down, but doing so in a way that creates an escalation of skills. Mm-hmm. So things get better for my dog and those little challenges, right? Being out on the front porch where, you know, it's not super distracting. Chances are it's not going to be that exciting out there on the front porch, but it's a little bit more distracting inside.
Yes. Right? And in the meantime, too, you're also getting your dog out to socialize or expose them to different things. So you take them out on the porch and, you know, you might just sit and let them just kind of roam about on their house line. And they're starting to go, okay, I can gawk at that. And okay, I can look at this. So then they're adjusting to everything outdoors.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then when you do bring them out for training, they're like, well, I don't need to stare at that tree across the street because I'm adjusted to it already. So we want to get them adjusted to the great outdoors and then slowly start to train.
The great outdoors.
Yeah. Even just the scents outside. Like, absolutely. As soon as my dogs head outdoors, you can just see them perk up. It's like, yeah. You know, the air smells great. Yeah. It's, well,
watch your sometimes dog's noses. It smells great. Watch your dog's noses. You see them air scenting. Those noses are so talented. Yes. They move in all sorts of different directions and take in all sorts of different information. Mm-hmm. But when you go outside with your puppies, like, watch their nose. Watch them air scenting the world. Yes. Sometimes I'll have a picture or I'll see a moment with my dogs that I just think is so fascinating. Mm-hmm. Because they're literally staring right at me, but their nose is contorted off to the side. So, like, there's multiple things going on there. There's multiple distractions for this dog. Yes. And that's a very normal thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times I think that we expect our dogs to not find the world distracting. And that's a really challenging thing.
Right, yes.
We need to give them little bits of exposure to the environment while asking them for a little bit more when it comes to their obedience. And then eventually those two things sort of culminate to
give you this great
situation.
Like the other day, I was watching a TV show and I was very interested in it. And my partner was trying to tell me something. And I was far too interested in that show. And he was talking to me in earnest right beside me. And I'm sure it was interesting, whatever he told me. But I was far too interested in my show. And then, of course, at the end, I was like, oh. And then I'm embarrassed now that I hadn't listened. But our dogs are like that, too. They're,
absolutely.
You know, they I think Christine's trying to tell me something. But, you know, what's that rabbit doing over there? I need to focus on that. Yeah. So we all understand that because we've all been that person. Or you're at the mall and somebody's talking to you at the mall and you're more interested in watching people walk by or things like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into things that sort of solicit an emotion from us, it gets even harder, right? Mm-hmm. So like if I'm in that same situation at Canada's Wonderland and I am anticipating getting on the Top Gun roller coaster, which unfortunately I've gotten too old for roller coasters.
You're never too old.
But honestly, I think I am though, because I experienced a couple of years ago, the last time I went to Canada's Wonderland, I got on the roller coaster. And when I got off, I was like, I don't feel so good.
Oh, that was just one day. You got to try it again.
And I used to be like, I thought as a young person, as a teenager, I thought my life is going to be about touring around to different amusement parks and testing. Like I loved them.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, I'm glad that didn't happen. Apparently, you just hit an age where sometimes your equilibrium now won't let you do it. Or maybe I just didn't do it enough. But anyways, if I'm anticipating getting on the Top Gun...
Or maybe it was those 10 hot dogs you ate before.
That was it. It was 20. And you're trying to talk to me about something serious while I'm like, the roller coaster. Like, it's going to be even harder for me. Or if I'm in a moment where I'm feeling stressed or fearful.
Yes.
You know, my body is telling me to pay attention to the thing that is making me stressed or fearful. It's not letting me take in information from over here. So all of those situations are the same for our dogs. Right? Yep. They're going to be a challenge. Yep. So.
Yeah, I think people forget to put themselves in the puppy situation.
Yes, absolutely. And we want to keep a high expectation. Mm. We want our dogs to listen despite all those distractions, but we need to be fair in how we introduce them.
Right.
And getting back to going out the front door, this is a scenario where usually we have a singular vein with our puppies and they learn that one thing. And that is door opens and I fly out of it.
Out like a gunshot.
Because we have a purpose, right? Yes. We want to get out for our walk. So they rehearse that over and over and over again.
Right. And it becomes a habit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then that habit becomes the thing that drives their behavior. Right. Now, what's missing from that situation is other habits.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So talk about that for a second. What are some of the things that you might do at the front door with a young puppy to create other habits so that it's not just that singular vein. It's not just door opens, I fly out. There's multiple options for getting the reward that your dog wants.
Right. Well, I've always taught my puppies they cannot go through a door without my permission.
Perfect.
And that's a safeguard.
I love it.
I've also taught my puppies as a second safeguard, they cannot leave my porch without my permission.
I love that too.
They are so proofed on it. I'm very pleased with them.
Yeah. Talk about that. Proofed how?
So I train it as a situation. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, we're going to work on this. You cannot leave my porch without my permission. So I set it up. I teach them what I want and I proof them by testing it out. I'll start to walk down off the porch without saying a word.
Perfect.
And they should hang out up there. I'll maybe have, you know, my partner.
And then, sorry, let me stop you for a second there. So you walk off the porch without saying a word and they stay on the porch.
Yep.
What is your reaction to that?
I would turn back, say yes, and go back and reward them.
Perfect.
I might go up and feed them or I might toss them a treat. I also, as they get better at it, I'll practice there on the porch and I open my door of my car. Then I close the door of my car. I pretend I'm looking for something in my car. And while I'm doing that, they should be holding position on that porch.
Perfect. So what if they got off?
If they got off, I would reprimand them. I'm watching them. So the moment I see their little feet starting to come down, I'm going to use an oops or a hey, something to pinpoint.
Perfect.
You're making an error.
Perfect. And why is that important?
I want the dog to know that leaving the porch is the wrong thing to do.
Right.
If I look up and now they've come off the porch and they're sniffing my tree and I go, hey, the dog's going to say, oh, sniffing trees is wrong. They're not going to realize it's leaving the porch that was wrong.
Timing is so important in dog training. We're creating associations with our dogs. So we need to make sure that we are mindful of good timing. And I love that. As soon as you see them starting to step off the porch before they've been given permission, it's so important to pinpoint that as the error so that you give them good information.
Right.
Because otherwise it becomes obscure, right? And our reprimands and our markers are meant to bridge a gap in timing.
Mm-hmm.
So in that example, just to break this down a little bit, in that example you used, you leave them on the porch, you go to the car, and you're rummaging in the car for something. Even if you saw them get off the porch in that moment, if you didn't give them any information about that, there's too much time that's going to pass by the time you leave the car, go back to get them, take their leash, bring them back up to the porch. There's not going to be a clearly defined moment for the dog there that tells them, that's where I went wrong. That's where I made the mistake. Mm-hmm. So that reprimand, that verbal reprimand, that little that says, that's the mistake. Oh, that's where you went wrong. And then we use the leash, we bring them back, we follow through however we follow through. And the dog goes, okay, got it. The problem was getting off the porch to begin with. They might make a couple more mistakes, but as long as you're consistent with that, they're probably going to pick up on it pretty quickly. And then, of course, you're also building value on the other side. Mm-hmm. So you're going to the car when they hold position on the porch saying yes from that hardest point of the exercise, walking in, giving them a treat. That's building value for that behavior of staying on the porch. Mm. So now
the porch has become a very valuable place for my dogs. They will just default to the porch on their own because they know they've received treats there and they know that's their place.
Yeah.
That's their spot. Even one day this summer, I was doing some gardening and somehow the gate must have blown open a little bit. And eventually Honda, who was 14 and kind of a little bit on maybe on the senile side, he wandered out and I saw him walking down the driveway just ever so slowly. And as soon as he got to the steps, he climbed the steps and sat on the porch. And I thought, what a good boy.
Yeah.
He came out of the yard and just went to the default position of the porch.
How nice to give him a clear idea of what he should do in that scenario and how nice that he is able to say, I can self-govern on this.
Right.
Yeah. I know this is where I should go because I've rehearsed that over and over again. Right.
This is where Christine wants me to be.
Yeah.
And he automatically went there and I thought an extra safeguard as well.
Yeah, absolutely. When I have a youngster in the house, I actually have tons of videos in our online programs. We have a resources library that has all sorts of videos of us doing practical things and actually working through the training with our own dogs and with dogs that aren't our own dogs. And they're basically examples of things. And I have so many examples in our resources libraries that I have recorded of me doing door work with my young dogs and with my puppies, because I think it is so important, not just for the walk. No. You know, the walk is very important to start off on the right track. But if my door blows open, if my screen doesn't latch, if somebody comes in my front door that doesn't necessarily know to close the door tightly, you know, all of these situations could lead to my dog slipping out the front door.
Right. Yes. And so that's often where you hear people say he ran out the front door. He ran out the front door. So yeah, I want my dogs never to go out that door.
Absolutely. And if the only experience they have with the front door opening is always going through it, that's the only option in their head, as opposed to creating these boundaries where they know not to leave the threshold until you say okay. And also by doing work with them as a young dog on a little bit of healing training at the front door, doing some work on having them sit and relax until you give them permission, doing some work on, you know, healing with the dog just over the threshold and then back into the house again, doing some work on saying, okay, and releasing them out through the door and then working a response to name and getting in big rewards for that. You know, all of those things, yes, they're training application and they're helping to build my dog's skills, but they're also building value mm-hmm. for the rehearsal of things that are not running out that front door every right. time it gets yes. open, right? So there's other options. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times people will ask, you know, how do I stop this behavior? How do I create a situation where, you know, I do release him. Okay, he'll hold the sit until released and then I release him and he bolts out the front door at that point. How do I solve that problem? If you give them other options, then they're not focused on that singular vein right. of just dashing forward out that door. Mm-hmm. So practicing things like that, it's such a practical application. And then it's an easy transition for you from doing little games where you're healing across the threshold and back, working response to name across the threshold and back, maybe working recalls from mm-hmm. the front door, from the dog in the front yard with a long line on, et cetera. All of those things are good to practice because they create rehearsal for scenarios that might happen in the future with yes. our dogs. And one of those scenarios is continuing the walk.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if we've practiced all these things at the front door, the dog's used to healing over the threshold, they're used to getting onto the porch and sitting, or they're used to sitting before the door even opens, mm-hmm. you know, all these little exercises that we can do with our young dogs, then it becomes a no-brainer for the walk to sort of get tied onto that and you to end up having a really nice walk with your dog that starts out perfectly and then doesn't include pulling the rest
right,
of the way.
Yes.
So it takes some work though.
It does.
I mean,
it does.
Most dogs will figure out the sitting at the door part pretty quickly mm-hmm. and the, you know, not dragging you out the door part pretty quickly if you do the work. I like to show my dogs what I expect from them whenever it's the first part of a training exercise. Mm-hmm,
yes.
You know, there are times where I'll say, you know what, you're wrong and we need to fix this thing, but I don't want to set my dog up by opening the door, letting him fly out and then doing this giant correction.
No.
That doesn't feel right to me.
No.
It feels like a setup. It
right.
feels like, you know, I'm going to lose my dog's trust because he's like, hey, what do you mean? I
right.
do this all the time, right? So that brings me to my next thought. If you have a dog that has rehearsed all of these things, it is not... You're not lost at this point.
No.
What would you do with a dog that, so say you bring home a new dog that's 3 years old and mm-hmm. obviously has rehearsed pulling somebody
yep.
out the door
uh-huh.
before he came to live with right. you. What are some of the things that you're going to do with that dog?
Well, I want to establish new routines.
Mm-hmm.
So dogs love routines.
They do.
And the new routine is going to be control at that door. So
yeah.
We're going to do a lot of working on sits at the door and all those beginning things
yeah.
that you talked about practicing.
Absolutely.
And the dog's going to say, you know what? This person has different routines for me
yeah.
and I enjoy them.
Yeah. And we're building value for other things that will exist within the dog's life. So then it starts to unbalance that mm-hmm. huge reward for dragging him out the door is no longer as big because you get rewards for other behaviors over here.
Right.
So.
Yes. And dogs are very situational. We talk about that and that can actually be a good thing with a dog that has exhibited bad behavior at
yes.
their prior home.
Agree.
Because now we're at the new home and this new home has rules.
Yeah.
And dogs love rules. They love rules. They love routines.
Yeah.
You know, my dogs, you know, look forward to things in the morning, the rituals of, you know, getting, you know, we get up and they stretch and I talk to them. We, you know, go to get their food ready. They know.
Yes.
They know exactly what's
oh, yeah.
coming next. And,
oh,
and they
yeah.
love that routine.
Yeah. When as soon as I get up, I let the dogs out in the backyard so
mm-hmm.
they can have their pee and their poo. And then, of course, they are in line at the food dishes
mm-hmm.
as soon as they've finished peeing because
right.
they know that that's our routine.
Right.
We have
yep.
breakfast early.
Yep.
Perfect. All right. I'm going to reach into our
question
box. Woo.
That's
pull
a big
out a
one.
Question. It is a big one. Okay. So thank you for sending questions
yes.
or for commenting on our YouTube videos or our podcast videos. We are always happy to have questions. So please, by all means, send them to us. And we will happily, happily answer some of them on our podcast.
And cookies.
Oh, send us cookies.
Send
yes.
cookies.
That's a good idea. Send us chip flavored ice cream. Cookies.
I saw a recipe for breakfast cookies and it's mashed bananas and blueberries and I can't remember what else, and oatmeal. And I'm going to make them because I think eating cookies for breakfast sounds good.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a good idea to me too. Okay, so my question here is a really good one, actually. I'm not surprised. We have very intelligent people listening, so very good questions. But this one's great. It fits right in, and I think it'll help a lot of people. So some dogs aren't interested in food, and this is true. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have a dog that's not super keen on food. When you put the leash on and they know they're going for a walk and they won't be able to be attentive to anything else but the walk, what do you do in this case? So for me personally, I would find something that the dog does find valuable and I would use that in place of food. Food is one reward option. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds of reward options. It just has to be something that the dog finds valuable. Right. So if I broke this down, I might try a toy. Right? I might try a toy as a reward for good behavior. And using a toy takes a little bit of a different nuance and finesse, but it is definitely still doable. Mm-hmm. So for example, if I wanted to reward my dog for sitting at the door when I'm using a toy, what does that look like?
I'm going to use the toy as the reward. When the dog does a job well done, I'm going to say yes and toss them the toy, or perfect, yes and tug and we're going to play.
Exactly. So if you have a dog that's not keen on food, but they love toys, that's a really quick fix there as well.
Yes. But I would also try to build some food drive too.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for times to do my walks when the dog's a little bit hungrier.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work to, we have an excellent video on YouTube, and it's building drive in puppies that aren't interested in food. So it's a great video to watch, and it'll give you some ideas and some games that can just get your dog turned on to food a little bit more.
Yeah, there are some really good ideas in that video. Good idea. And then, so if I have a dog that isn't quite into food and I'm building food drive, but in the interim, I want to work with them, toy is a great other option. Mm-hmm. Anything they like is a good other option.
Yes.
So I always use butt scratches as an example because Ned loves a good butt scratch. So I use that a lot in my reward system. I use snow throwing in my reward system. I use all sorts of things.
Did you notice the Buffalo Bills when they were playing, every time they got a touchdown the other day when they played in the big cold game on Monday?
I didn't watch.
All the fans were throwing snow because they had had the huge blizzard before.
Ned would have been thrilled.
Yes. Yeah. There's all, every time they got a touchdown, you see so much snow being thrown around the stadium.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun.
Yes.
Now, in the situation where I have a dog who goes, nope, not into food. Nope, not into toys. Nope, not into anything but getting out that door for the walk. Guess what I am going to use as my reward?
Getting out the door for the walk.
You got it.
Yes.
You got it.
Yes.
So, you know, in this case where I need to break it down to the simplest reward I can give my dog, it's going to be you sit and then we get to go. Yes, we get to actually leave and go for that walk. Mm-hmm. And if my dog pulls at that point, well, I'm going to turn around and we're going to come back in, you know, and I'm going to try again. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to get to progress with the walk until I'm not getting dragged out the door again.
Right.
But the reward of me actually saying yes and letting him go through the door is going to help to move that little marker of understanding to the point where he goes, oh, okay. So I get to go as long as I'm not pulling on that leash sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes thinking outside the box a little bit with dog training is a really quick way of getting to a solution depending on the dog. So don't ever hesitate to think outside the box. Do you have any other thoughts on building rewards there?
Well, just on thinking outside the box, I had a Saluki and she wasn't super food motivated. I had to work on that. And she ended up being, but it took some time for me to get that drive in her. And she also wasn't very toy motivated. And I discovered that she loved toys that were made out of fur. So, you know, show her a little rubber squeaky. She's like, oh, that's boring. But show her a little furry, like, toy made out of rabbit fur or mink fur. She was, like, over the top and loved it. And so my training just went boom once I discovered she liked furry toys. So, I had to do a little bit of investigating online to find people who made fur toys. But it made a huge difference in my training.
Fantastic.
So sometimes you've got to experiment and think out of the box a little bit.
Absolutely.
And but you will find that one thing that turns your dog on.
Yeah. And they all like something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had to be pretty creative over the years with a lot of dogs to figure out what they like. But there's always
some dogs would rather lick treats too, rather than eat a treat. So sometimes bringing a syringe with cream cheese in it, it's very novel to the dog, and you squirt that little bit of cream cheese out the syringe, and the dog's like, I love this. Or Cheese Whiz.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So this question here, this one's a little bit trickier to answer because there's some fear involved. So I'm going to read the question, and then we'll discuss the answer a little bit, because okay. I think it is a good thing to discuss. It's just there's not going to be quite as simple a solution, I don't think. So I have the opposite problem with a dog I got at 2 years old. She sits frozen and will not move no matter what I do. Won't move inside the house to go to the door, freezes like a statue. So that's a challenging situation. Any tips?
Well, often with behaviors like that, it's important for a dog trainer or behaviorist to see the dog.
I agree completely.
Often, you know, we might recommend something, and without seeing the dog's body language, it was the complete wrong thing to do. So we really generally recommend that you get someone to see that behavior.
Yeah.
You know, in our online program, people send us videos all the time, so we can really analyze and custom coach from the visual that we see.
Well, and the nice thing about being able to see it is a lot of the times, if the human is not necessarily super well versed in reading dog body language and behavior and understanding, they assume one thing. And then when they describe that to us, we're thinking along those lines. Okay, that's what they're seeing. That's what's happening. Whereas sometimes it's completely different when we actually see what the scenario entails and we actually see the language on the body or the body language on the dog, we interpret it very differently from what somebody might actually interpret it at when they're trying to ask about the problem. So seeing video of things is so great. But honestly, anytime you are dealing with a problem that is based in fear, aggression, you know, any sort of real behavioral issue, I think that's the best possible advice you could give is seek the help of a trained professional who can help you see what's happening and can help you through that problem. So it's definitely a challenging problem to work through when you have any sort of fearful behavior in a dog, but definitely doable. So,
and there's lots of different ways to approach it. So definitely just don't read something and give that a try. Have someone look at your dog to make sure that is the right thing to do.
Yeah. So this next one is very short.
I'm not reading any questions because I forgot my glasses.
I'm getting to the point too where I'm like, ooh, how do I hold this? I think I told my my funny toenail story last week
about
my vision and toenails. So we'll let you go back and listen to that podcast if you want to hear my funny
story. It's a little bit too much information though. For the squeamish. Not for the squeamish.
Alrighty. So this one is short and sweet, and it's not really a question. It's more of a comment. And it says, leader goes through the door first. What do you think about that?
Well, leader, that is very good, but the odd time the leader might give permission for somebody else to go through the door first.
Yep, you bet.
So, yeah, so if I'm picking up my purse or tying my shoe, but I feel it's okay for my dog to walk through that threshold, or maybe I see my son coming up and I want my dog to greet my son, I might say, okay, go, you know, off you go.
For sure.
But it's my permission though.
Yeah, exactly. I have a couple of schools of thought on this that I like to talk about when people are really clinging to these ideas that the dog is always trying to dominate the situation, you know, and that's why they're rushing through the door first is because they're trying to dominate the situation. And, you know, it's a bit of a stretch. I mean, yes, it's pushy behavior. Without question, it is pushy behavior. And without question, it is something that we should address and help our dog to find other skills. But a lot of the times when a dog rushes through the door, it has nothing to do with you. It's all about, I just want to get out there.
Right.
I'm just excited.
Excitement.
So again, is that a misdiagnosis of what's going on? Or is this a dog who truly, if there was a dog who was challenging the rules, you know, maybe they're an adolescent in the house. This happens. We know this happens, right? They hit their teenage years and they become a little bit obstinate.
Teenagers. They become teenagers.
Exactly. They're differentiating from their family unit.
Right.
They're trying to gain more independence.
They think they know everything.
Yeah, exactly. They want their own car. Yeah. It's not really about the whole dominance thing, but it's more about moving on with their lives and their development period, right?
Yes.
So we have these scenarios where if we have a dog who is challenging us, that's a dog that's not allowed on my couch at that point, right? Like I always have my dogs up on my couch as long as they're toeing the line at home and listening well and there's no issues behaviorally. My dogs have lots of wonderful freedoms and they love it and I love it and it's great. So normally they'd be allowed on the couch. Normally I would open the door and say, okay, and let them out on the porch while I get my shoes and stuff organized. And
chances are too, when we give them permission to go out ahead of us, they just don't take off. They turn to look back.
Yeah, that's good.
When are you coming out?
Yeah.
So I'll say to my dog, okay, you can go out. And then they stop and they turn and they say, well, when are you coming?
Yeah.
They don't just off they go. Yes.
Well, and I mean, that's what happens when I get to the park with my dogs, when I get to anywhere with my dogs. Like I let them out and then they look at me and go, okay, what are we doing now?
Yep, what are we doing?
And I create that engagement with them. But truly blaming all of these little nuanced behaviors on a lack of leadership can sometimes be, you know, just a bit too much off the wall. We want to hold our dogs accountable. We want to show them good leadership. But all of these little things, they really only matter if we're struggling already with leadership, right? Like if I have that dog who is an adolescent, their freedom is stripped, they're spending more time back in their crate again, they lose couch and bed privileges, you know, this is a situation where I want my dog to realize that all the good things come from me and permission for those good things come from me. And that's a dog that I might say, you know what, you're going to wait. I'm going to walk through that door first, then I'm going to release you so that I can really drive those points home that you need to be accountable to me and you need to wait until you're given permission.
Right.
So that's a sort of a yes and no answer.
Right.
Right. Yes. Like sometimes it matters,
right,
but not always. It truly depends on the dog and the relationship and how things are going.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Like if we, you know, say we adopted a dog from, you know, the Humane Society, and I don't know, you know, where this dog has been, what it's been up to, I'm definitely going to be a bit more, I would almost call it like boot camp in how I start off with the dog, because I want the dog right away to say, okay, this person is the leader, there are rules.
Yeah, and structure is such a blessing when you have a dog that is coming into a new situation. We actually did an episode on rescue and it was a fabulous episode. We had Instructor Carol on. So have a look at that on the podcast, but you are absolutely right. Like that
Whereas
dog needs
structure. Your dog, Ned, came over. I know Ned's a good dog and I know he's been well trained. So I'm not going to come in and say, you know, hey, Ned, do this, do this, do this. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to feel him out first and see what happens.
Yeah, it's not necessary. Yeah. And chances are he's going to be treading lightly and giving good behavior because that's what he is.
Ned and I are just going to sit and eat breakfast cookies. That's it.
Nothing but breakfast cookies. Okay. Ooh. All right. It might be useful before taking a puppy for a walk for the first time, 4 weeks in the hallway before exiting the house, but does not address the issue of leash pulling. So this is interesting because a lot of the times it is hard to break down things in your mind. And especially when you're looking at a problem and you're trying to find sort of a quick fix solution for it. And I want to try to warn people away from the quick fixes. They're usually not the nicest things.
Right.
And, you know, as much as we want to hold our dogs accountable for their behavior and as much as we do use correction when we need to use correction, you know, it's not fair to look for a quick fix on something that has been a problem.
I don't understand why people don't want to put the work into their dog. Like, put the work in. Don't look for the quick fix. Like, this is a living, breathing, feeling being.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's no quick fixes that are...
There's not.
There's
no
good.
One singular solution that is going to stop the leash pulling. It's a process.
It's training.
Right? This is how we like to do things. We don't want to use these quick fix, heavy duty corrections that put our relationship on the line with our dogs, right? I want my dog to trust me. I want my dog to trust that I'm not going to put him in over his head just so that I can correct him. Like, that to me is not fair.
Right.
I want to build him up rather than tearing him down. And like I said, there are times for correction, but it is not in a situation where my dog doesn't know any differently.
Right.
I need to give him other skills. You know, it's the same with children. We want to be fair. We want to give them goals. We want to slowly add to their behavior and add to their confidence and their understanding at that same time and not necessarily set them up to fail.
Right.
And to really not enjoy us or enjoy training, you know, and I don't enjoy training that way. You know, I like enjoying my dogs.
Right.
I like building them up. I like seeing them go, oh, my light bulb's going on.
Right.
I get this. I like seeing them try so hard, not because they're avoiding a correction, but because they're going, I get this.
Right.
I understand. I am a participator in this.
Yes.
Not just, you know, I'm going to put my tail between my legs and hope for the best.
I think a lot of people, and I feel bad for people who don't have these wonderful relationships with their dogs. I remember one of our students.
It can be tricky.
Yes. One of our students did level one with us and with quite a few of his dogs. And then he brought another dog and did three levels. And he said at the end of the three levels, he goes, I thought my other dogs were great and I had great relationships with them. But the more training I did, I discovered how much more of a relationship I can have with my dog.
When during COVID, I sort of slipped into this routine where I wasn't doing a lot of training with my dogs. And I honestly felt the relationship start to slip a little bit. Not in that there was bad behavior coming out of them, but they weren't looking to me as readily for engagement, for what are we doing. And as soon as I got out of that funk, whatever that was, as soon as I got out of that funk and got back to training them, it was like, oh, now I feel it again. Right, and I couldn't even, I can't even necessarily put it into words. It was just a gut feeling that I just wasn't getting the same sort of push to engage with me that I was used to. So training makes a huge difference. And that's not to say that you have to be in classes for the entirety of your life, but working on some tricks with an older dog, like that's great engagement. Right. Yes. That's great getting them to use their brain. Mm-hmm. That is rewarding for all species. We all like using our, flexing our mental muscles and learning things. Right.
Well, one of the reasons that dogs were domesticated was because humans saw their value in hunting, in herding, and helping around the house with things, pulling wagons, you know, driving cattle to the market,
doing the dishes and the laundry.
So dogs have been bred for generations to work with us. Yes. So it's a disservice to take a dog and not do anything with it. That goes against that dog's genetic being.
It's true.
Right. They want jobs. They want to work with us. That's why they've been domesticated.
Yeah, absolutely. And they love it. They love the training. You know, if the training is fun and fair, they love it.
Right.
And it's so great to see them, like, see their light bulbs go on and see them start to offer you these behaviors on their own because they've been reinforced for them so much, et cetera. So
And especially too, I know there's a trend for people to want dogs for emotional support animals. And a dog can't emotionally support you if it has no training.
Yeah.
So those dogs, they do need to be trained. We had a phone call in the office once from a lady and she said, my doctor recommended an emotional support dog. So I went out and got a dog and she says, he's not supporting me at all. And he was just being a regular puppy.
Yeah.
We went through everything he was doing. And, you know, I assured her, I said, this is not a poor dog, a bad dog or a poor dog. He just needs some direction. He needs some training from you. So she signed up for our classes and she was a wonderful woman. It was a wonderful dog and we got her on track. But I think she expected the dog just to innately support her.
Yeah.
But it wasn't given direction.
Yeah. That's a tricky scenario for sure. You definitely, it needs to be the right dog. It needs to have enough understanding. It needs to have a stable enough temperament. Like there's so many factors that go into that. So I'm glad you were able to get them on the track. That's great.
Yes.
Well, this has been a fun episode.
It has. It has.
On that note, I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!